The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. We are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions. Welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, which represents the SGG of this ridiculously named podcast series. But the QA, that's what we care about. That's what we're here for. Like to make this an interactive conversation every week that we record. It's why I like to host my podcast on a Monday. Give us a chance to chat out some of the top stories in tech, sort out our feels, maybe some new news broke over the weekend, and we can get to it. I'm already seeing a ridiculous collection of awesome tech pals here in the chat right now. Dave Burns, who's always kind of giving me some playful nudges there. He's my favorite troll. All Greg, we got Gary the Fireman, we've got Simon Says Hypno, we've got Gormlord, we've got Barry Johnson, we've got Engineer Reacts, we got Chatty Boy, 2 Turbo, Dustador, Aditya Anil, who else am I missing? Vasticose 8 threw in a little hey and hello there. The Hawks TV, we got a good crew jumping in right now. So what I'd also like to do, everyone in the chat right now, I need you to throw an F to Gormlord, who just broke his phone screen. And so hopefully Gormlord is able to get that repaired or replaced easily in this age of component and part distribution problems, that they're not without, you know, a good phone for them for too long. So F's in the chat for Gormlord, and we're feeling for you, and hopefully you get it sorted and you get it all fixed up. Simon Says Hypno, I would agree. Simon Says Hypno, I would humbly say the best crew. Well, no, this is exactly why I like, you know, sort of kicking off my week with a podcast is like, we get to check in, we get to kind of refresh. This is my like therapy time so I can like find some other like-minded people. Because it's been real gross out there. We've got some really cool stories to talk about. We've got some really frustrating stories to talk about. And I kind of feel if we don't have a good place to kind of vent some of this stuff, even the good things, that energy, that excitement, I'm wired like a puppy. You know, you look at a dog and you think, oh, that's a happy dog or that's a sad dog.
And dogs don't really work that way, not with like directly human transferable emotions. There's sort of like a dog at rest, a dog that's calm, a dog that's excitable, a dog that's confronted. And I kind of work that way too. Even when things are really, really good, that excited energy can kind of turn on you. And if you don't have like the appropriate outlets to nerd out or to geek out, to kind of get some of that stuff out of your brain, it just kind of stews in there and it gets really gross. So yes, Dave Burns, you're saying you built yourself an echo chamber. yeah, kind of. And Chatty Boy, I mean, again, this is the more positive spin on it. Hashtag some mental health guy. But we're getting to the end of the year, and there's just something about these metrics, these timelines, these calendars that we put on ourselves, that we want to reach goals or we want to look back and reflect. And this just seems to be the type of year for many of us. We're just wired to fit into this cycle. And to look back and to, you know, did we have any regrets this year? What were our favorite things of the year? What were some of our challenges? Next year, how are we going to be better than we were this year? It's a pattern. And it's a pattern that can be really wonderful for some people. And it's a pattern that can mess other people up. And I feel if we don't kind of sort of confront the good and the bad and we kind of enjoy the highs and the lows, it's easy for this stuff to turn on us. So, yes, Dave, I built myself an echo chamber. I hope everyone out there, I hope you all had a wonderful weekend. This was sort of our calm Christmas prep weekend. We got more decorations up. We broke out. We had to go to our storage unit just because our new place is real small. We can't fit everything in here. And we've got to start really downsizing. Like, we've got to take this stuff seriously. And we finally got some decorations up. And watching Lex kind of appreciate having gotten to see some family for Thanksgiving. We did like a little ice cream social with some of her classmates at school. So like the little pod of kids that have all been in the same classroom, we met up and got to meet some of their parents. And like, this was special for us. Like all these kids are running. So we went to a Baskin Robbins. So it's after dinner, it's like 7 o'clock at night. You got a bunch of 6-year-olds just coked out of their brains on sugar and all the parents just kind of chilling. Like, hey, this is the first time we've gotten to speak face to face with a grown up in like a month. There's like my daughter, you know, like climbing the trestle and the wall and the railing outside an ice cream shop. So it was a refreshing experience being able to just interact with other parents and stuff. So I gotta shout out some folks here. Apparently we're in the middle of a hype train. Hype train! Gary the Fireman gifting a tier one sub to Vazicose 8. Also to All Greg, Steve, Q3 Becker, we've got another subscription at tier one, subscribed for 23 months. We're about to hit the 2-year anniversary. And, Steve, again, thank you so much for all the support and all the assists on keeping the show looking cool. We also have a 2 Turbo gifting a tier one sub to Gabaletta. All right, this is your first gift sub. Gary the Fireman spending some bits. This is awesome. Thank you so much. Into the hype train. Hopefully we get that special emote that we can kind of throw around. Again, I know there are like really cool tools that you can use on Twitch where when the things like that happen, they can like make alerts or do fancy things for you. I'm just going to try and shout them out. So, getting into this week's show, like I said, we've got some good news, we've got some killer news, we've got some frustrating things to talk about. It's all just the same pattern and format for the show. But I wanted to spend a little time kind of getting into the end, after we kind of cleared the gadget block. I'm just kind of putting it out there. I'm debating whether or not I even want to turn this into a standalone video. But I just don't feel there was a phone of the year, and we're getting into those kind of collaboration videos, like what phone was your favorites or what phone did this the best. And the answers to that tend to be pretty predictable. So I wanted to spend a little time just kind of chatting out, like, especially with folks in the chat here, what were some of the other exciting things that happened in 2021, some of the other cool stuff for phones and gadgets. So Gary the Fireman just blew us up, and level 2 hype train has been completed, gifting tier 1 subs to Rubbenevolent for Boang Bite. Gary gifted a tier 1 sub to Nosy. So Gary the Fireman is gifting tier 1 subs to some Gadget Guys community. They gifted a total of 217 on the channel. That is incredible. Dave Burns, what? Gifted a tier 1 sub to Sammy. To Sam, what's up? Gifting a tier 1 sub to some Gadget Guys community. Gifted a total of 7 on the channel. Thank you guys so much. That's amazing. Again, the support, the conversations, and keeping this thing flowing, I cannot thank you enough. And this is awesome. So we're definitely getting at least one choo-choo emote. DTNL MFers. So why don't we knock out some housekeeping here real quick? I didn't even pull up my own website. All of the stories, everything that we're going to be talking about this week, available on the show notes, somegadgetguy.com. I've been trying to find... We're getting to the end of the year. I'm still trying to take some time off. Like, it's funny how disruptive just taking a Sunday off can be when your workflow is so sporadic and spread out that... Like, for over the most of this year, I was genuinely a 7-day worker, like 7 days a week. I had something to do. It wasn't always like a 9-to-5. I'm working all day, every day. But you would spread things out. Like, this day, I've really got to write ahead. Oh, Lex is taking a nap. Let me jump in and see if I can't edit something real quick. During school, let me make sure I've got these video pieces in place. I've got to go out and shoot camera samples. Like, you, even when you take some time to, hey, let's go hang out at the zoo, like, you bring things with you to accomplish other projects. You know, like, oh, if we're going to the zoo, let me bring these two phones and then also this mic, and then I could maybe also shoot, like, a little segment, you know, out at the zoo. Wouldn't that be cool? Or I could get these photo and video samples. So... This December, I'm just like, I am unplugging on Sundays. For every Sunday in December, I'm shutting it down. So it's funny, like, just cutting out that, you know, that little window of work that I used to do or write on Sundays, like, it just completely shifts up the dynamic of the rest of the week. So I haven't gotten out as much. There are some video projects that I really want to kind of follow up on. And then there's some stuff happening at reviews.org where we're going to be changing some of my beat. You know, like my news beat is like wireless infrastructure stuff, but those don't make for the most exciting videos. So they're also going to start using me a bit more to talk about like things you can do with your tech, where Shaka is reviewing phones. I'm going to be telling you what else you can do with phones. Just some slight changes coming up. And then also some projects that I'm looking at prepping for 2022, where I'm hoping we can change this up. I'd really like to just start talking a bit more lifestyle and not spending so much time dedicated to these like monster review videos that don't go as far, that don't get as far. Hey, we just cleared the next hype train level. Hop train! Gary the Fireman with another tier 1 sub to Riviera 613 and to Barry Johnson. What's up with that? That's awesome. Hey, that's great. And TK Bay, absolutely. I feel like TK and I are brothers in arms, where we're kind of cut from the same cloth. You know, my brain runs like that all the time. So that was a really long and rambling way. You would expect nothing less to explain. I got some things out, but I didn't get as much as I wanted to. So one of the major videos last week, Pixel 6 camera, 4 things it gets right and 5 things it gets wrong. The good and the bad, and I've been having incredible experiences with smartphone cameras in 2021. The Pixel 6 is no exception, but I also feel it's critical that we kind of keep consistent. And I really hate the all or nothing, it's the bestest or it's garbage style of average consumer review. So I wanted to tackle the Pixel 6 with a little nuance, a little explanation. So, I mean, this video is not short for it just being kind of like a bullet point listing of all the things that I like and I dislike about the Pixel 6 camera. Then the other video that I've just been getting hammered for is OnePlus 9 on Android 12, what works, what doesn't. And it's another kind of just back and forth pros and cons. We're definitely going to be spending some time talking about the OnePlus 9 Pro in the gadget block. But let's just say that my thoughts on the OnePlus 9 Pro have not been shared by a good chunk of the Android enthusiast community. I don't know. It's so funny to like feel sorry for a brand. But I've had really solid experiences on OnePlus this year, and the prevailing commentary is still this, like, OnePlus has betrayed us. It's so toxic. So let's save that for the gadget block, and let's chew through some news. Yeah, Simon, I mean, for sure. Nuance, just tell me I bought the bestest. And then Barry, yes, people are seemingly furious. I'm not sure what OnePlus was supposed to do at this point. And Simon says, Hypno, LG is dead. Can OnePlus please step up to the whipping post? So, yeah. Oh, and Dave, you know, especially once we get into the gadget blog, I've been having so many little back and forth kind of sneaky DM comments and conversations with David, because he has a OnePlus 9 Pro. And my SIM card is round-robining like crazy. Like, it's going to be going back into the Surface Duo 2 for a couple days. We're going to be doing, hopefully, TK and I can set up a phone swap just to close out the year. Something we can talk about in January is a folding phone challenge. Just something fun for both of us to spend a little time on phones we didn't get to review so hard. It's so hard. This is the silliest first world problem. But when you're a tech reviewer, you don't get to live in a device the same way that a consumer might. And it's one of the reasons why I try to front load my preferences, my bias, what I'm looking for, and how I'm trying to come to a conclusion, but I'm also trying to give each device some time. So if... What? We just crossed another hype train! So Gary the Fireman, JMX Warrior, and Nom sending out a few more tier one subs. I'm seeing like 1,000 bits going. Level 4 has been completed, and thank you so much. That's amazing to see another gear reached on the hype train. Happy holidays, indeed. So sorry. I've completely lost my train of thought on that, but we'll come back to OnePlus and we'll cover it properly in the gadget block. So all of the Simon says that's right. I was talking about phone swappers when tech goes polyamorous. Aw, Gary, we love you too, man. Thank you so much. That's awesome. You've just been rocking my socks right now. That's killer. All right. But yes, so when we get into the gadget block, I'll come back to this idea of living with the device and really trying to review products and how, like, the more I do this and the older I get, like, those tiny nuances matter, and it's impossible. It's down to those silly little things, like, I want to be able to tell you about this gadget. But setting it up also meant that I had to switch over my Bluetooth headphones and wipe out my watch and repair my watch. And this is not the experience that a consumer would have at all. And so to be so hyper fixated on, you know, like a tiny little menu change UI graphic this got, you know, moved over and these buttons are a different size. It just, we're so far off the pulse. You know, my, now everyone on my family on Pixels is on Android 12. I've heard zero complaints. They don't care about the new buttons in the notification shade. My wife is one of those, like, very passive aggressive, like, well, it used to work better. You know, when something doesn't work, she doesn't, oh, I don't want you to fix it. I don't want you to jump in and fix it. I just needed to tell you that it was broken. But she also knows that, like, as soon as she tells me that it was broken, like, I'm not going to be able to focus on anything else until I fix it. Has had zero to say about Android 12. My sister, my brother-in-law, my dad, who just, like, the simplicity of a mobile device needs to represent something that he can get to his solitaire card games and look up restaurants. And, like, you know what? He's doing fine on Android 12. And I've got a pretty broad cross-section of different family members that are on Pixels, and none of them have been bothered by Android 12. So I know I'm probably not representative of the greater consumer base at large, but I do find it telling when techies really start complaining about stuff. And whoa, Gary the Fireman, dude! Tier 1 subs to Kappa Cash, Endless SC, Dustador, Welp I'm Damn, and the Hawks TV. Wow, man. Thank you so much. If anyone out there can help Gary out with just spending some bits, if you've got some bits, I know this is a wacky Twitch thing, but Gary, all by himself in the last minute, we're about to close out Hype Train Level 5. If you've got bits to spend, if you want to highlight comments, if you want to tell me to stretch or to take a drink of water, that will also contribute to a Hype Train. Can we clear the last 3%? And help Gary out. He's done this almost entirely by himself. You're amazing. And we did it. Hype Train Level 5. You guys rock. The Dimitri Simon says hypno. Read my message. Yay! And Dustadori telling me to check my posture. My posture is going to be terrible. We cleared it. This is amazing. All right. We're 9:20. Housekeeping went long. It always goes long. Let's get through some news, because we want to follow up on stories and we want to pay attention to trends. And again, this is the right time of year. Dustador, hype train and notice me. So here's the choo-choo hype popcorn as we close out Hype Train on Twitch. You guys are big ol' nerds and I love it and I love you all. What I need is like a Simpsons emote. I choose you for whenever we have a good hype train. But yes, Gary the Fireman, thank you so much. And for everybody that's been supporting, we did it. We cleared it. I'm so excited. All right, getting into the news. Everything, SomeGadgetGuy.com, show notes for this week's episode. Last week was kind of a rough week for Apple. Investigations and disclosures on privacy and on tracking. I've just not enjoyed the direction that this company's been heading over the last couple of years. And I wonder if and when there might be some kind of consumer reaction. Like, how far does Apple need to push before consumers go, you know what, I'm good? When we see the ebb and flow of money, of how, like, iPhone 12 sales were up, but now iPhone 13 orders are being cut. There are back orders because of component issues, but then they're also cutting back because demand is sort of chilling on iPhone 13s. To their shareholders, they're saying, hey, we're going to pick it right back up in January. And you're like, I don't know that you will. You know, if folks are already kind of cooling off on iPhone 13. I'm sure it's still going to be one of the most dominant phone sales of first quarter 2022, but I don't believe that without stimulus checks going out that Apple's going to hit the same kind of sales peaks that they did for the 12 Pros. Maybe the iPhone 13s pick up, but you know, we're already seeing in like Apple subreddits, you know, people going like, hey, you know, I was going to go 13 Pro, but the telephoto isn't that great. And that's one of the features I really cared about. So I saved some cash and went back down to the iPhone 13. It's the so much psychology and marketing and advertising go into this stuff. And it's things like this story that we keep circling back to. A major component of Apple marketing is privacy and security. And as much as they spend and as much as they push that idea into the faces of their consumers, I don't believe they're doing a very good job of living up to the standard that their marketing is setting. And this is another good example of making a claim, but not quite living up to the reality of that claim. I feel Apple is legally living up to the claim that they've said it, but that's not the idea that they're leaving with their consumers. So this is an Ars Technica article written up by Patrick McGee. Also kind of a, I believe the story was originally broken on Financial Times. Screen share, there we go. Apple reaches quiet truce over iPhone privacy changes. From the article, Apple has allowed app developers to collect data from its 1 billion iPhone users for targeted advertising in an unacknowledged shift that lets companies follow a much looser interpretation of its controversial privacy policy. And it goes on to break down, like last May, we started seeing this do not track, you know, ask apps not to track. There's this little pop-up window. They even show it, you know, allow Facebook to track your activity across other companies' apps and websites. And then you can say, ask app not to track. And it leaves the iPhone owner or it leaves the iPhone user with the impression that we are setting up some kind of like brick wall. Like, we are going to stop this app. iOS is the most securest. We're going to shut this down. And the reality of this is far from the truth, especially as we start getting into social media apps. Snapchat is publicly commenting on their ability to still track user behavior and use that analysis as marketing data that kind of enriches the company's portfolio. There's a reason why Google spends $10 to $12 billion a year just to be the default search options on an iPhone. You can't tell me that even when you say do not track, that a device identifier searching on Google isn't being followed to find trends in that user's behavior. You know, especially after some of the issues that we've seen, like Google getting sued for how much info was tracked and consumed with incognito mode, right? There's no way just to, you know, private that. There's no good way to hide that. And so Apple gets all of this goodwill. They get all of this marketing benefit. They get to put up all of these billboards. And it's technically true that, you know, iOS gives you this option to prevent companies from tracking your data under these conditions. But that's not really how people use their phones. And that's not really what people expect from this type of marketing. So it's kind of a bummer. Sorry, let me catch back up Simon says hypno. I mean, you can ask the app not to, but you can't tell it. and dust the door. I mean, this isn't, again, we always want to be careful. And I know I step over this line a lot, but when we're criticizing the moves of an almost $3 trillion company and how this company monetizes its user base, my complaints are complaints on behalf of iOS, iPhone, iPad users, Mac users, because I don't use their products. Now, eventually, whatever Apple does to make money will affect me, as other companies copy Apple to try and make money. No charger in the box, getting rid of the headphone jack, removable batteries. But this is the real sort of situation that we find ourselves in. Like, if you're an iPhone user and these types of business practices rub you the wrong way, where do you go? And increasingly, what I'm telling my family and friends, both, you know, Android and iOS, is the best way to kind of stick it to some of these companies is just keep your older phone around longer. Replace the battery and run it even longer. Like, vote with your wallet by not voting. You know, that's the only kind of solution I have to try and keep people on functional products. And then, I'm sorry, I should mention the comment that you wrote, because it was a good comment. I get so bummed out using my iPad Pro because the drawing and design apps just aren't really that great for Android tablets. Procreate kind of has a stranglehold, and I'm hoping they create an Android app. Again, this whole conversation, and if you go to an Apple subreddit, I mean, it's becoming, like, political toxic. I mentioned, you know, like, I was last week watching someone just saying, oh, I wish my iPhone had a better telephoto, and getting swarmed by people telling them that they were wrong to have any kind of feeling that might be critical of Apple business practices. It's that bad. And that's the reality. Like, dust to door, that's the true lived-in experience and reality of what we're all facing. Like, if you want to do business with a company or vote with your wallet or do something that runs counter of the products and services you're already familiar with, it's not easy. And I don't ever want to diminish, you know, like, changing ecosystems sucks. Well, if you don't like what Apple's doing and scanning your phone for content, then you just go to Android and Google is just as bad. And you're like, none of that's true. And you should be allowed to criticize a trillion-dollar corporation if you own one of their products, especially. That should be your consumer right on any of these forums. Again, we think nothing of trashing OnePlus, and yet Apple somehow gets to be special for all of this stuff. Yeah, this is by design. Dave writes, switching cost is a massive barrier to entry. Getting around consumer behaviors and consumer familiarity, again, it's insane. And you've got to attack it like you have the same kind of war chest of funds as a trillion-dollar corporation. So, again, I bring this up for our community here because we're also the people in our circles of family and friends that are most likely to need to play tech support. And Apple's marketing does a huge disservice to consumers who probably believe just the most shallow interpretation of Apple marketing. So unfortunately, it's going to be on us. It's going to be on us to spend some time over the holiday saying, like, hey, don't do dumb things with your tech, or hey, don't share things that you might not, want to share publicly. Or it's kind of on us to be the educational resources to help untangle the billions of dollars of marketing spent on how people handle their products and handle their gadgets. And just to kind of plant that seed, you know, just because you clicked do not track, it doesn't really seem to mean anything on an iPhone or an iPad. So, hopefully as all of the baby boomer politicians start literally aging out and dying off, we'll get some millennials elected into positions of power that will have a more fundamental understanding of how this stuff works. So speaking of tracking, and when we talk about disrupting business models and how toxic that can get, another one that we need to keep our eyes on, this one coming by XDA, Corbin Davenport over at XDA. Life360, the new owners of Tile, reportedly sells detailed location data to other companies. I mean, this just blows, and it's why it's so incredibly important that we acknowledge real competition. From the article, Life360 has been around for years as a technology company with various location-based services, including a family tracking app of the same name. Life360 recently purchased Tile, the company behind the Bluetooth tracking devices of the same name, but now might be the time to throw out, strike through, recycle any Tile trackers you might own. So here's, I'm putting this on Apple. Again, because I'm such the hater and I drink the Haterade, what happens when you come up with an innovative business model? You've come up with a product, and the product helps you locate other things that are easily lost. So you're a company, you're going to call your company Tile. You make a little tile, and it's got this little Bluetooth transmitter, and you create this market. I mean, other companies and other products have built similar things. I had like three different reviews back in the old, like, first generation Gadget Lab. But Tile is the company most responsible for creating this market. And then Apple says, hey, we're really going to get strict with other apps that they're not allowed to opt people in. We're going to make it super unfashionable on iPhones to let apps track user data, user location information, scary warnings. So you install your Tile app, and the Tile app needs all of these permissions, and that leaves an unsettling feeling. The optics of having to approve that data tracking makes people feel uncomfortable. But when Apple makes AirTags, well, that's just rolled into Apple's core product finding services. So you're just opted in. It's not as scary. And it's Apple. So we trust Apple because they're all about that security and they're all about that privacy. So Apple completely knocks off Tile and has an entrenched advantage in being able to tie their AirTags directly into, like, the core mechanics of the iPhone, something they would never allow Tile to have access to. If you're Tile, what do? With the remnants of this business and Apple taking such a clear shot at knocking off and copying your business model, but being able to build it in directly and natively, they got acquired. You know, like, this is what happens when we have anti-competitive business practices, monopolistic business practices, and where Apple can do things for themselves that they would never allow a competitor to do. And so Life360 is looking to monetize their acquisition, and they're going to do it in the scummiest way possible. So now what was once this innovative genre-defining product is now just an adjunct to another data broker. And this, I would say this is Apple's fault. I would say that this is a clear, I mean, this should be in Senate testimonies. Anytime there is any potential fear of what could happen if Apple has too much control over the App Store or is too monopolistic with their business practices, this is a clear example of the harms that come to consumers and the ripple effect that can have when we let Apple go unchecked. It's such a bummer. And Tech Loving Mama is in the chat. Everyone say, hey, Tech Loving Mama. It's my favorite thing to just yell in the middle of a podcast. Everyone say, hey, Tech Loving Mama. Dave Burns, monopolies are bad? Didn't we do this whole thing with the gilded age like 100 years ago? Like, isn't this almost the same thing, but like maybe with fiber internet and not railroads? Yeah, I wish we could handle longer term economic forecasting as part of our metric for whether or not companies are succeeding or failing. But, you know, I keep coming back to like divestiture and breaking up the Baby Bells and how good it was for consumers when we broke up AT&T, and seeing how we have sort of trekked back in many directions towards entrenching this walled garden style business policy. Otaku, you don't like Monopoly? Shaking my head. It's a good family-friendly game. We haven't tried playing Monopoly with Lex yet. I don't know that she would be able to handle it, so we'll see.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
So, Gabaletta, I'm not sure exactly what you're saying here, but this was in their reasoning for selling out to Life 360. Apple created this butterfly effect, and we are now seeing the initial ripples. But one of the things that bothers me is that it becomes a self-affirming or self-fulfilling prophecy. So Apple makes this grand show of going after third-party apps and services, of scaring consumers on the amount of data that's being trafficked, that puts other companies that had fine business models. Like, I don't remember hearing anything too scummy about Tile before now. And so then the people behind Tile are like, well, we got to get out. Like, or just, we got to sell this off, or we got to be backed by someone bigger. So then they do. And then that company is looking to monetize. So they engage in those business practices that Tile would not have engaged in on their own. And then Apple gets to point to that and say, see, we told you, isn't it so scary how they're going to sell off your data? And none of that would have happened if Apple were forced to have some kind of regulatory action against them if they completely rip off and nuke a competitor's business model for their own products. And that's, I think, the thing that bumps me out the most, is at its most surface level, someone's going to look at that and say, well, see, that's, I'm glad I'm using AirTags. But that whole cycle, you know, this FUD wouldn't have been created if Apple hadn't created it and then profited from it. And that, to me, is what's just so much more toxic about how Apple's marketing strategy creates completely unrealistic expectations for what they can actually accomplish. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, just because I can ramble on way too long about, like, copyright and legal issues, and it's just always such a bummer and such a downer. Even when YouTube's trying to pat themselves on the back, they put out this report, you know, Access for All, a Balanced Ecosystem and Powerful Tools. This is like one of their first major reports that they're trying to give you a peek into copyright enforcement at YouTube. And it, as much as they're trying to say, like, well, only like 2% of these content ID things ever affect creators, and how many of them were in error, it doesn't really make them look better. So they're trying to say, like, of the 2% of content ID dispute claims, less than 1% turned out to be false positives. And you kind of look at the numbers and you're like, yeah, that's still like 3 million videos every year that kind of fly under the radar. That's not, I mean, 1%, 0.5%, 2%, sure. I guess those numbers are pretty good, but that doesn't mean that the YouTube copyright strategy isn't still fundamentally broken and stacked against creators. The thing that's troubling, it doesn't matter how many cutesy tutorial videos, you know, YouTube Academy videos that they put out there. The realities of copyright law are really complicated, and a lot of people misstep in ignorant ways, but without malice. And so there's always this emotional component that someone can kind of jump in, make some videos. I really want to do a commentary on one of my favorite TV shows. And they don't understand just how complicated copyright law is. And so they make a mistake and their video gets you know, hammered with a copyright notification or a copyright strike. And then they're emotionally hurt by that. They try to reach out to another community of people and they, oh, look, I'm getting unfairly targeted. And you go back and you watch the video and you're like, well, you would have a really hard time defending that in court. So I'm extremely conservative, not Republican, Democrat conservative, but just cautious and anxious about anything involving copyright to the point where I don't even put music on my videos anymore. It just, like, music licensing all by itself is such a headache that I don't want anything to do with it. Even with, you know, licensed tracks for YouTube, there's no such thing as a music agreement in perpetuity. And even with public domain footage, I have tons of issues. I got another copyright warning that someone else has licensed audio from Night of the Living Dead. Night of the Living Dead is public domain. So I used to do all, like, a whole bunch of, like, speaker and headphone comparisons using content so you could, like, hear the differences. I still kind of do that in my Patreon videos, but I gave up trying to do them publicly because it was, like, once a month someone else would use a clip of a movie in the public domain. That it's, you know, I use one of the most iconic lines of that film, "They're coming to get you, Barbara," and YouTube would side with them. They made something that has the same piece of public domain content. Well, now you're running afoul of their copyright. And when you kind of are continuously having to defend that, and YouTube never has any system where that they figure that out. So their content ID matches the new work, but they're not looking back to see that new work is built on something in the public domain. So my work should actually be prevented for existing before the new work, but that's not how it operates. I don't have deep enough pockets. So I gave up. It's just really not worth fighting that every single time someone else gets a clever idea to use something from Night of the Living Dead because it's public domain and you're allowed to do anything you want with it, but YouTube's content ID can't handle that. That is one step too complicated for YouTube. So the flip side of this is a lot of the times that you see big review channels, they're doing, like, movie reviews, and I have to use reviews with big finger air quote bunny rabbit ears. A lot of those times, I would not say that those are good examples of protected commentary. You know, if we're talking about fair use commentary and critique, there was another YouTuber who just recently had, like, 150 anime videos just struck. And to go through the entire process of remonetizing those videos, you have to give yourself a copyright strike, then go back, appeal, and eventually you can kind of convince YouTube to repeal the strike and replace the video. And that can be like a months-long process times 150 videos. So there's a huge emotional upswell of support for a channel like that. You know, this person has put a lot of time and effort and work. They probably have a small staff. And this horrible media company that distributes this anime, they're just going after him. They're just in it for the money, and they don't even care about the fans. So I watch one of his videos, and it's another one of those, I'm gonna talk really fast and I'm only gonna put up footage from the show. I'm not transforming any of the footage from the show, but I'm just showing you these clips and these highlights of the show. I'm talking really fast, but I'm basically just regurgitating the whole plot of the series. And at the end, I kind of tacitly throw in some feelings, or I liked when this happened, but I didn't like it when that happened. And maybe this was so that they could go into season two. But it's so basic. And we're talking about, like, a half hour video, all of the footage of the show condensed so that you wouldn't need to watch an entire season of television. A major component of fair use is, did the creator betray the original media. So back in the day, that could mean a movie spoiler. You know, like Siskel and Ebert got themselves into hot water by revealing the twist of a famous movie, a famous drama. You're like, that used to be the standard. Like in the middle of a movie review, which was maybe 8 minutes of television, they gave up a major turn, and that put them in an actionable position. From as far as lawyers were concerned, in terms of protecting the content that they were commenting on. So, but then I'm going through and I'm watching, and they're just using the music from the show, but they're not commenting on the music. So, like, if I play a little snippet of John Williams, like, let's say I want to talk about Star Wars. If I've got Star Wars music playing and I am not actively talking about that music, I am using copyrighted music for my own benefit to make my video better at the expense of the copyright holder. I didn't pay for it. I didn't license it. I would not be able to afford to go to Disney and say, hey, I want to use, you know, John Williams' score. Are you going to let me? I don't have money like that. That's not going to happen. But then I'm watching this content creator and he starts mixing in like other media. Like at one point he cuts to the Terminator theme because there's like, yeah, we need to, you know, this is a real serious part of the show, And you're like, why would you do that? Not only have you moved from anime and using all of the anime series music, now you're using the Terminator score? There's no way you would be able to take this video into a court of law and defend it as fair use. There is nothing transformative. You're spoiling all of the reveals of the entire show. Your video would your video is to your financial benefit, and it betrays. Like, someone could watch your video and then decide, you know, I don't really want to watch this series. Like, it betray, I mean, to the point where it gives up all of the information from that show. And not only are you using all of the content and all of the music of that original series, you're also mixing in content and music from wholly unrelated media properties. And you're like, again, I don't have the money to go out and license the Terminator 2 soundtrack or original score. I would be buried. Lawyers would laugh that video out of the courtroom so fast. There would be a judge would dislocate their eyeballs from rolling their eyes so hard watching that and then hearing, entertaining any notion of this video being fair use. It is not, it's barely commentary. Again, regurgitating the plot is not commenting on the plot. That is just betraying the plot. And then there's nothing transformative. It's not like you're making a parody of it. It's not like you're making a spoof of it. It's not like you're acting out a fan film. Where LucasArts back in the day would let people use all of the Star Wars IP to make new things and to make parodies and to make fan films. That's totally different than what we see in a regurgitation plot YouTube review. So it's really heady stuff. For those people that are making a good faith and an earnest attempt at trying to play within what I feel are the appropriate rules, the appropriate, you know, sort of guidelines of commentary and critique, you got so many people that are also just making terrible examples of review commentary or fan commentary. Then on the flip side, YouTube's entire copyright system is horrifically broken. And the way that these videos are monetized is not equitable. It is not fair. So to be stuck in the middle watching both sides going like, there's no good solution here. I can completely appreciate why there's never been a competitor to YouTube. That mess is horrific. To be able to try and sort out how to solve that problem, the only way to do it would be to start with like a tight group of content creators, to have your own lawyers on retainer, and then to vet the content that's made. That would take such an economic startup. It's wholly unrealistic. And when we saw attempts like that back in the day, like, you know, when YouTube hit, there was Vimeo and Mevio and Blip, Google TV, you know, like all of these other competitors, they all ran into the same problems. And so YouTube's solution is fundamentally broken, but it's broken to their own profitability. I am so sorry. That was supposed to be a short piece. Excuse me. Kappa Cash, they're coming to get you, Juan. Yep. Yes, Gabaletta. I'm so far behind in the chat, I might not be able to like really highlight these properly. Gabaletta writes, the most thrown response to copyright is fair use. Fair use does not protect you from using copyrighted material. It gives you a fighting tool when taking to court or facing litigation. There is no proactive fair use defense. There is only a, I'm being sued, there is a fair use defense that I can use in a court of law. Do you have the money to fight Viacom? You do not. So it doesn't even matter if you have a good faith fair use argument. You're going to lose just through the war of attrition that you will face in fighting one of these cases in court. So anytime you've seen, you know, like, you watch a video and it starts with like a little disclaimer. You know, this video is protected by this Copyright Act and its fair use. Look up commentary and critique. That means nothing. Again, an actual lawyer would look at that and giggle and then go, oh, now I know there's copyrighted material in this video. We can monetize it for ourselves. Let's do it. Let's take their money. I mean, that's the reality of what we're working with right now. So again, Gormlord saying everyone seems to be on his side, but I haven't heard these details. Like, obviously a lot of work went into making those videos and he was profiting off of those videos, and he has hired a staff to make videos like that. I think his business model is fundamentally flawed, and I don't think he understands that in making videos entertaining the way that he has, he's actually way off the rails. I do not believe he has. First of all, I am not a lawyer, but in reading and in trying to produce my own movie review show and getting slaughtered by online copyright mechanisms for it, I do not believe he has a good argument if he were to ever take his case to a court of law. I feel like he could try and claim these are spurious DMCA takedown requests, and he would probably lose bad. And in losing bad would be on the hook for even more damages paid to these media companies. I do not think that would be a good idea for him. He can hopefully win in the court of public opinion, where if he can piss off enough of the company's fans, the company might back off. But to me, that's also a losing battle for the company, and they might want to make an example out of him. He's put himself in a position where he would be a good individual to be made an example of from the company's perspective. So we got to see. But yeah, when I watched, like, literally the very first video I watched is just nothing but footage from the show. There's no host. There's no on-camera, you know, personality talking. It's just footage from the show, top to bottom, content from the show, music from the show. No conversation about the music. It's just there to make the video more enjoyable. And then they start mixing it. When they run out of entertaining content from the show, they just start mixing in content from other media properties. In one video, literally the first video of his that I clicked on, if I were a lawyer, I'd be salivating at going after that guy. Again, if I were a young lawyer trying to make my nut, I'd be like, that dude, let's take all of his money. There's literally nothing he could do to defend himself by making videos like these. Aditya, looks like Spielberg won't be getting any of my money. Thank you, Simon. Yeah, Gary the Fireman, Rick Beato's What Makes This Song Great series is always demonetized, but if YouTube takes it down, he tweets at the artist. And again, that's where, when it comes to copyright, the company holds all the cards. They can decide to what degree do we choose to enforce our copyright protections. And if they deem that a conversation about like the creation of this piece of media that uses clips of the song to talk about how that was made, that would be a really ugly fight for us in court. You've got interviews with artists, or you've got with interviews with producers, or you're breaking down. I mean, like, what makes this song great is a perfect example of really threading that needle. Because when they talk about components of the song, they're not just playing music to make their videos feel better, or I mean, to make their conversation sound better. They're hyper specific about what goes into this creation, this media. A lawyer could make an argument that this supplants the song and it might make someone less likely to listen to this song, but literally the name of the show is What Makes This Song Great, and would probably encourage more exposure and more participation. That's what we tried to do with Movies You May Have Missed. The show was positive only reviews. I mean, sometimes we would get a little silly or a little snarky about like low budget fare, kind of in a best of the worst kind of a way, but the whole point of our show was, can we help you find some of these gems that maybe you missed? And it was before the explosion of all of these movie channels that were out right now. Essentially, every review we made was a spoiler-free love letter commercial for that movie. And even we couldn't sustain just the onslaught of copyright issues that we had producing that show. There was no way to defend it. We would have needed a huge bankroll to stick out like the various defenses in court from getting our show just pulled constantly. At its peak, we were averaging just under, somewhere around 3 million streams and downloads a month. And no one wanted to have our back on that show. We predated the Plinkett reviews, you know, like, watching what movie commentary has become is pretty tragic. So again, you know, when a company or when a property gets demonetized, like makes What Makes This Song Great, there is an appropriate course to go out and say, hey, this is what I'm trying to do, and an automated system has taken me down, but you might want to take a look at this because I think it would be advantageous for both of us. And then the copyright holder can say, hey, yeah, let's do that. And that's totally reasonable. That's the way this process should work, but it doesn't most of the time. Yeah, Simon says, no, again, I think a lot of people get confused. Sorry, this is the last comment, and then we'll move on because there's one more really cool news story that I do want to cover, and I'm already running long. I remember movie review shows, and they would maybe show 2 30-second clips, not like the people on YouTube. And then he also writes, has anyone seen Pat Finnerty's What Makes This Song Stink series? So I haven't seen the What Makes This Song Stink series, but there's a lot of people who think like, oh, well, if I only use 5 seconds of a clip, then I'm protected by fair use. And that's not true at all. Like, I don't know where that actually comes from. Any snippet of a piece of copyrighted material could put you in an actionable position. And a lot of these people that love to use movie clips as like the punchline to a joke, that's technically not fair use. Like there's nothing transformative about it. You have not transformed that into a new piece of media. That's not what our IP protections were built around. It's hard. I mean, again, you're most of the time you get to kind of fly under the radar and companies won't like freak out about it. But that doesn't mean you found like the magic loophole. I used 7.3 seconds of that movie, and that means I'm proactively defended against copyright litigation under fair use. Doesn't exist. That is not a thing. You can still be taken down and you can still be sued. Yeah, Ted, I mean, this is probably totally true. That 5 second thing probably came from YouTube content, i.e. not being able to flag it back in the day. Probably. All right, here's just a fun story as we're getting to the end of the news block here. I was going to talk about the Sex and the City thing. Apparently, there's a scene in Sex and the City involving a Peloton, and when that new Sex and the City is it a movie? I don't even know if it's a movie. When it went up and that scene aired, Peloton stock dropped like 10%. I just thought that was silly. But the good story, the thing I am super Twitter-pated about, I saw it first here on the debrief.org, written up by Christopher Plain. Let me screen share. Oh, no. Hold on 1 second. Sorry, I just jacked up my entire OBS. There we go. DARPA-funded researchers accidentally discover the world's first warp bubble. So many Star Trek jokes, but oh my gosh. This isn't like a theoretical or a hypothetical, like a real warp bubble has been discovered. I am so nerdily excited. I remember like 10 years ago, and they're showing like they're showing like a theoretical idea of what like a warp vessel could look like, and if you warp space before and behind this vessel, like you can travel, you know, really, really fast. I remember reading about sort of the theoretical science behind this back in the 90s, and to think that this is a peer-reviewed actual demonstration of warping space in a little controlled bubble is absolutely incredible. And where we were thinking like this would take hyper exotic materials, and then it would take more energy than we could possibly generate, you know, capturing all the power of the sun, and now like it's actually happening in a lab, is stunning and is just insanely exciting. And if there's a next step here where we might be able to start using this as actual or real proper propulsion, again, I'm just too much of a Star Trek nerd. I just, words fail me at how ridiculously Twitter-pated I am getting at the notion of real warp science being something, you know, maybe my grandkids might be able to utilize. Like, that's crazy. That is insane. You jerk. Aditya Anil, I can't wait till actual scientists use the pen through a piece of paper trick to explain this to normies like me.
Well, you see, when we're talking about wormholes, you know, like we think about space, and the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. But if we can bend space through a wormhole, then we can bring those points together, and then the fastest point between two points is not a straight line.
See also the movie Time Crimes for a very similar explanation of time travel utilizing the
poke a pencil through a piece of paper
scientist in a lab coat explanation of complicated science. I love it. I'm just so excited. So that it's going to close us out on the news block. We got to plug the subreddit. Every podcast has a subreddit. Mine is no exception. The subreddit charts are a little wonky, just like last week, because we're almost halfway through the alternative phone brand elimination challenge. Day 9's bracket just went up on reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. And hold on, let me pull that up separately, and then we can go through what the other top voted on stories were this week. But the phone challenge has been a lot of fun. We went from like the lowest vote tally on Friday, knocking off two brands, to the highest vote tally over the weekend, knocking off new. So here, let me throw this up here real quick. So let's see, we've lost Alcatel, Blue, Cat, Duji, HTC, Huawei, Kyocera, LG, Micromax, Nokia, Nu, Unihertz, and of course we started by just cutting BlackBerry right from the beginning. Vote tally was really close though. iQOO and OnePlus were the second place tied. So they live on to fight another day. I just think this is funny. Like if you were to really ask smartphone enthusiasts, Like, who had a worse year? Like, Lenovo? Are you telling me Lenovo did better as a phone brand than OnePlus or iQ? I think a lot of people who really own those products would be hard-pressed to say, like, oh, well, yeah, they totally made better phones than the one I own. So, again, it's just always interesting to me, like, I was just happy LG didn't go out in the first round, because without releasing any phones, I still think LG had, like, a stronger year than HTC, Blue, Alcatel, Cat, and Doogee. So now we're getting into the, like, to the real nitty-gritty, though. You know, like, maybe ZTE, was their year particularly strong? Asus had some premium and some gaming phones roll out. Black Shark, Infinix, Nubia. Who was really jamming on Nubias this year? Was their year particularly strong? Would you say Nubia had a stronger year than Sony with the Xperias? And the perception of all of this is, I think, what's critical. Because for me, a strong year is not just who sold the mostest, but, like, who had good support, who got, you know, updates out. Nokia, I feel, kind of deserved to be voted out on the reputation of the Nokia 9. That was a bad misstep for them to close out 2021 with. So reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. The remaining bracket is up. We're almost halfway through. And if we get more ties, like if two companies tie their vote, then all of the tied companies are going to get voted off too. So Aditya Nil, I'm surprised Fairphone has been holding out this long. So let's see who we got left. We've got Asus, Fairphone, Google, Black Shark, Honor, Infinix, iQ, Lenovo, Meizu. I don't know how to pronounce their name. Microsoft Surface, Motorola, Nubia, Oppo, Poco, Realme, Redmi, Sharp, Aquos, Sony, Xperia, TCL, Vivo, Xiaomi, and ZTE. So now we're getting into companies that I think all had kind of reasonably strong years. So we're going to have to see who actually gets voted off over the next couple weeks. So getting into the rest of the... let me get this out of the way here. Getting into the rest of the week, unfortunately, because the brackets are a new post every day, I'm kind of messing up the subreddit. So right now, if you go to Best of This Week on Glowing Rectangles, it's a lot of the brackets. So we can skip over these. I took the first actual video spot, my OnePlus 9 Pro review of OnePlus 9 Pro and Android 12 video is our number one spot. Grant likes tech. Grant has the Vivo X70 Pro Plus. He came in second. A first look and detailed walkthrough of the X70 Pro Plus, a phone I love. And then someone shared an eBay link, just looking at a Velvet 5G with a dual screen. Someone's selling this off. It looks like that's already been sold, but it was for like $200. I'm not sure how much I want to encourage people sharing, like, selling a used phone links on the subreddit. So I'll ask the other mods if we should start, you know, maybe removing people talking about the phones they're selling. But then number four, there was a great video put up by Koki Yamaguchi looking at an Xperia Pro I and really using it as a photographer out in the field. And then rounding out the top five, we've got Ike's Tech Talk, MagSafe on any phone, here's how. And holding up a Pixel 6 Pro, looking at some wireless charging. So just a really great wrap-up of other videos, but everything right now is kind of fallen behind the phone elimination challenge, which I'm hoping we can wrap up maybe around New Year's. Like, if we can go another couple weeks, and we get another tie or two, we should be able to wrap this up right at the end of the year. So I think my timing was pretty close in putting out a 36 company bracket on the subreddit, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey everyone, this is Zach of Zach Talks Tech. If you're looking to make sense of the tech that you love, if you're looking for an filtered opinion. Someone who's just straight to the gun, gets right to it, no nonsense. Come on over to Zach Talks Tech. I stream 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 9:15 p.m. Eastern. And then I cut up clips of that show and I throw them out there for you on Tuesdays and Thursdays. But if you want to be part of the live show, check it out Monday, Wednesday, Fridays at 9:15 p.m. Eastern. Check it out, Zach Talks Tech on YouTube. That's ZAKTALKSTECH. Or as they call it up here in Canada, it could also be Zed. ZAKTALKSTECH. Check him out on all the socials. We'll see you there.
It's also just been funny to me, like, how many techies are just sort of like, I'm really into tech. I didn't know about any of these companies. And I get why people are like, oh, why isn't there Samsung or Apple? Because then they always just manage to, like, tank the vote. And I really wanted this to highlight all of the other brands that people just don't consider. You get to the end of the year and it's like, well, I can think of maybe four companies. So who had the bestest year? I don't know, Xiaomi. And you're like, okay, cool. I don't really think you thought about that. Like, someone was like really angry with me, like, why would you put HTC on there? And like, because HTC released a phone in March. They released a new Desire. Oh, but it's not real HTC. No, it's the real company. No, but they sold off everything to Google. No, they really didn't. They sold a lot to Google, but they didn't cut their entire phone division. They gave 1,000 engineers and developers to Google. Oh, but I mean, that's not fair. Like, you're really bad at this. You are so passionate about being informed on tech, and you are not. This is not a good look for you right now. So yeah, it's some funny stuff. Oh, and Aditya. So Aditya is totally biased. Never forget that Aditya is completely compromised with a comment like this, and you can tell he's biased. Y'all, Sony smartphone cameras are so effing good. I did not think I could fall in love with a phone camera after LG. It feels, works like a unique piece of equipment. That was, again, it's just a really exciting thing to see someone just like a phone and be able to appreciate the pros and cons. I was being a little silly and a snarky there. Obviously, all humans have a perspective, and that's technically what a bias is. All right, what are we at? 10:13 in the a.m., and my voice will not hold out for an extra long edition of this podcast. So why don't we kind of get through this, and then we can spend a little time talking OnePlus 9 Pro, and also sort of bests of the years as we kind of get into the end here. I need to put a video together on this. And I'm going to be way behind, and it's a bummer just because of work schedules and stuff. But Surface Duo 2, excuse me, Surface Duo 2 got a pretty major update. So Microsoft actually published, it always makes me so cranky when a company like doesn't tell you what's in their updates. Duo 2, this update addresses scenarios outlined in the Android Security Bulletin, improves system reliability and stability, improves app navigations, and additional, and with, I'm trying to talk too fast, with added support animations, improves camera usability, improves touch responsiveness, improves support for LDAC-enabled Bluetooth devices, improves reliability in Android Auto, and new Surface Duo 2 features enabled in Surface Duo settings. Choose the default screen when folded, and in settings, choose preferences for answering phone calls when folded. Their app and their website is totally broken right now, which is hilarious, Microsoft, because there are a few other things to talk about, but this December update for the Duo 2 is kind of huge. So it seems to me, every time we launch a new phone, there are massive teething pains. Every time there's a significant update to a phone, there are massive teething pains, and especially when a phone is somewhat more ambitious in what it's doing with form factor or in stretching Android to its limits, there should never be any expectation that something like this is just going to be 100% bug-free, ready to go out of the box. And I'm a little tired of this techie commentary where it had some bugs. It should just work, which has never been true for any phone, any computer, any tablet, ever. It is always an ongoing process of finding the bugs and eliminating the bugs. That doesn't turn your customer into a beta tester. That's just the reality of how all this stuff works. And I'm willing to extend just a little bit more consideration to a Duo 2, a Z Flip, a Z Fold, because what they're trying to do is significantly more ambitious than just making another slate candy bar phone. These updates have actually been pretty sweet. I did not have significant gremlins with usability. Again, you get a feel for a Duo 2 where... Oops, I just dropped the stylus. You get a feel for a Duo 2 where it's like swiping and moving, they need to be more deliberate gestures. And if you try and use a Duo 2 like any other phone, it's going to feel wrong. But that's not a bug. That's actually a feature because you have to be able to navigate two screens with gestures that go in different directions. The biggie for me, they did really fix LDAC. So on the Duo 1, the Bluetooth radio isn't great. I had good experiences with it. I didn't have the same kind of like just savage signal stability issues that other people had. But if you used LDAC on a Duo 2, like going from here to here would be too far. Your earbuds would cut out and your signal would just die. I hooked up my Sony's, my XM4s, popped open Qobuz and started jamming and walked around my house. It's not as powerful a Bluetooth signal as some of these other phones that are sitting on my desk right now, but it is so much more functional than it used to be. So that to me was like the big, I can't live with this problem on the Duo 2. And I was really worried that it would be a Bluetooth radio problem that could not be fixed with software. It's been fixed. The rest of this has just been stellar. Refinements to performance, 90 hertz displays look great. Everything else has been working really well. And this to me is like the process that we should be celebrating. We should see improvements, we should see updates, we should see heavily customized software get better. And then they finally are starting to consider some of the usability. So I think I can show this on camera. So I haven't been using it as much. And I'm talking to Marie, like maybe we'll switch, because right now we use Keep for our notes app. But I'm hoping that Microsoft can figure out that when we have stylus support, it means we also want additional functionality. So on an S Pen or on an LG, if you click the button on your stylus, you can come up with like a context menu and you can do stylus things from that. We don't have that on the Duo yet, but now I do have OneNote support from a button press on the stylus. And it's one thing. It's only one additional function to the Microsoft Pen, but it's so handy. So I'm walking around and I just go, and I can jot down some notes. And it's such a little Moleskine notebook kind of interaction. This totally makes the experience of a Duo so much more organic. Again, if you're on a anything S Pen, you totally know what that feels like. If you've ever been on a Note or on a Fold, you go, and then you start doing something, that's huge. So what we need now is the ability to program or customize the apps that we use, or maybe come up with a context menu, maybe add some of the accessibility features like magnifying glass, and that would bring us into the Surface really being a more considered productivity device. Oh, we got a comment here from Barry Johnson, but one, sir, isn't it supposed to just work? That's what the complainers tell me, at least. And the thing is, it does. Everything just works. You got to pick your pros and cons. Like, One UI 4 is on 4 updates already. That's not good. If One UI 4 on Galaxy S21s were just working, there wouldn't be a flurry of all these smaller updates. Oh, but Samsung's showing us that they're really going to support their products. Yeah, but they're not doing it well if they've already released 4 patches since putting out One UI 4. And someone correct me if I'm wrong, but haven't they pulled the Android 12 update for the Fold 3? Now, we're going to talk OnePlus, and that's evidence that OnePlus can't do anything right. But on the most expensive phone that Samsung sells, well, that's different, because Samsung pulled their update. Okay, well, we're very understanding for Samsung, but OnePlus, that's like Oppo. I really don't understand what we're doing anymore. I mean, again, anytime you break down that kind of inconsistent, well, but it's different because reasons. The other one that's going to be coming out here, and we're into the second week of December, and I know I should be more patient, but this whole like tease and rollout for updates on the Pixel 6, like just do it. I really don't like when you talk about an update and then you tease the update and then you tell us everything that's going to be in the update and then you're like, and it'll start rolling out soon. Just give me the update. Excuse me. So snap faster, hear better, and do more with your Pixel. I want all of these features. This next Pixel drop is looking rad. Adding Snapchat to the quick tap menus. I don't use Snapchat. I know people who love Snapchat. Do you know how cool that is that you would pick up your Pixel and not having another button, but having like a customizable tap action to the back of your phone? Your phone detects when a physical vibration hits in a certain way and you can go directly into a feature. That to me is super cool. I do believe that's some of the issues people have had with Google Assistant randomly doing things, like randomly calling people. The activation, it's my hypothesis that the activation has been tied to that double tap. So I removed Google Assistant from my tap shortcut, but I think that might be what was messing up some people. Sorry, back to this feature drop and this December update. I gotta scroll down. Ultra wideband is gonna be enabled, so we'll have faster file sharing for ultra wideband devices using Nearby Share, and better location precision, along with BMW partnerships so that you can use your phone as a key for your car. And then for accessibility stuff, I did a video last year talking about hearing services on your phone. So you can use your phone as kind of like a volume booster for conversations. This new version of it where they're using the AI cores to hone in on a specific person's speech and to cut background audio looks absolutely incredible. I want to play with this so bad. So you pop in some earbuds, you hold up your phone so that the camera kind of gets a vibe on the person you're talking to, and then it locks on that individual, and all of this machine learning hardware should do an even better job of filtering their voice out of a busy background environment. Looks amazing. I just like, this kind of stuff is like science fiction to me, and I really wish it were getting a bit more press. So on top of this, this update is supposed to also bring like 100 other fixes to the phone. Like the list is just insanely long. I can't even go through all of it right here. But this whole like, Samsung has put out 4 One UI, the update and then bug fixes and patches. And here's Google. I mean, again, they're kind of rolling it all into one big ball, but there's a huge OTA that's coming to address a whole bunch of this stuff. So what is the commentary? When the Pixel 6 launched, Google can't do anything right. Look at all these gremlins in Android 12. I really like the hardware, but the software, oh my gosh. Samsung, Android 12, tons of bugs. But you know what? They'll work on it. They'll fix it. You know, I wouldn't throw out your Galaxy S21s just yet. Like, what is this tone? What is it that we're trying to do here? Like, at some point, you can just say everything sucks. Like, if that's your bag, fine, I guess. But at the end of the day, like, someone needs to own a phone, and techies are acting like either everything sucks and nothing's worth it, or I guess you just grin and bear it, and you could use a Samsung, I suppose. Like, what is the benefit here? I don't understand what they're trying to do. Gabaletta writes, I'm so tempted to grab a Pixel 6. I have really enjoyed the 6 Pro. I cannot find any significant issues where the additional horsepower of an 888 would matter. I really like how Google is trying to streamline a bunch of daily life interactions. Using a Pixel on phone calls is flipping awesome. Like, abbreviating all of the menus and things that you do when you're put on hold. How many times I've used call screen? Oh man, I love watching people bail on call screen. It's really sweet. Again, I really wish we were tackling this with a bit more nuance, because there are pros and cons, and there are definitely some cons to owning a Pixel, but playing with the 6 Pro, man, that telephoto is something else. It really is good. I'm now, like, just instinctively relying on the 4x zoom telephoto in conditions that I would never try to shoot on another phone. You can miss me with an iPhone 13 Pro. Vivo and Galaxy Ultras are awesome in good light, but I would never shoot with them indoors, like, to try and freeze action. It's another beast entirely. I'm even more excited about the telephoto sensor than I am the main camera sensor, from all of the work that Google's been doing to showcase that kind of computational photography. It's really something special. So yes, I do believe most people are probably better off getting the less expensive Pixel 6. There are a handful of people where, if you could, I don't think you'd want to use anything else but a 6 Pro. I kind of have fit myself into that box, where I'm very surprised, because usually I'm the ultra-wide guy, not the telephoto guy. Let me take a drink of water here, because I'm starting to flake. Man, I get this out of the way. from Aditya, y'all are making me want a Pixel 6, but after Juan's discussion on the telephoto lens, the P6 Pro is calling me. Darn you, gadget guy, for your nuanced conversations. I'm kind of an enabler. I'll take this as a quick question here from Tobias. How much does the Xperia Pro I overheat compared to Galaxy S21, OnePlus 9 Pro, and Xperia 1 Mark III? So, putting them all together, and I can't see, this is what's difficult. A Galaxy S21, I can't comment on international varieties because I haven't tried the Exynos version. The Snapdragon version with enhanced power mode off, because remember, Galaxies come throttled out of the box. They use a different CPU scheduler, which reduces some of the CPU load, but their GPU is left kind of unchecked, which I don't know is a great combination. I could run the Galaxy S21 camera a lot harder, but the camera app would get stutterier and we would start dropping more frames. So, and I'm talking about like 4K 60 frames per second. On a OnePlus 9, OnePlus limits you to 5-minute clips at 4K 60 and 4K 120 and 8K 30. But if it's hot out, you're running that phone super hard, you can tank a OnePlus 9 before you get to that 5-minute limit. You just kind of have to know environmentally what your buffer kind of is. Like this last Easter, I shot everything 4K 120 watching my daughter fight for Easter eggs during an Easter egg hunt, and then I set it to opera. And it's maybe one of the funniest videos I've ever made, and I can't show anyone it because I don't share photos or videos of Lex publicly. But it's hilarious watching these girls, like, claw at one quarter slow motion in 4K for these Easter eggs. I was shooting short bursts because I knew I was going to be slowing this down to one quarter speed. So every second is really 4 seconds of content. I think I shot roughly 10 minutes of footage in short clips before I got my first thermal warning. And so, and it was like an 80 degree day in Southern California. So it wasn't cool, but it wasn't hot. That was the reality of shooting on the OnePlus. If you see, like, literally one of the first videos I did on the OnePlus 9 before it had any patches, any updates, any bug fixes, it was 70 degrees and I was just shooting minutes and minutes and minutes of footage in 8K, and the OnePlus 9 handled great. So it really does come down to how aggressive are you using the phone, what kind of background services you have, what are the environmental issues. But so far, I still think that, like, the Pro I turned out to be a really well-behaved phone for having a Snapdragon 888. Shooting 4K 120 on the Pro I, it easily outlasted the OnePlus 9. You'll eventually crap every phone out. I think the iPhones can probably run the longest if you need to shoot really, really long clips of 4K 60. Samsungs will let you run longer than you should. You will degrade the footage before the phone will shut you off. The Vivo was actually kind of like that too. It was over 100 degrees when I shot my Panasonic footage. I did a Toughbook video. A bunch of that video was shot on the Vivo, and as I was getting to the end of my shoot, just for all my B-roll, the phone would let you keep cycling footage, but I would go back and I'd look at that footage, and there would be lots of frame drops, lots of stutters, lots of even a few, like, corrupted frames where it would glitch. Again, I don't know that I would just look at pure overheating, because I don't know that there's a good way to compare oranges to oranges to oranges. Instead, I would look at, like, your shooting behavior. And then also, if you're trying to accomplish, like, long takes or long cuts from a phone, you probably just want to step down from 4K 60, and you'll probably last a little longer. You might need to drop from HEVC to H.264. If you're trying to save space on your phone, that's more CPU intensive. It runs your phone just that little bit harder. You want to give yourself the edge. You've got to look at what is the environment you're shooting on. And then also, I need to play with things like active fans. Like, I wonder if I could use a fan while operating the camera to at least get a little extra runtime in a way that wouldn't destroy the audio of that footage. So it's unfortunately, I can't answer it simply. I thought the Xperia Pro I handled the A88 really well. I think the Galaxy S21 has done a reasonable job of throttling the A88 so that you can run certain things longer, but it also still runs crazy hot. It's kind of all over the place right now, and I think it's probably going to get a little bit worse next year with the MediaTek and the ARM V9 and the Snapdragon 8 Gen 1. I think it's probably not going to get better. Peak power is going to drain our batteries even faster than peak power on the A88, and we'll need good throttle modes to rein that stuff in, because you don't need peak power. You don't need the CPU and GPU cranking to maximum, except for very specific instances. And using the camera really isn't one anymore. Yeah, Gabaletta. Exactly the same situation on the S21s also. I hardly use the camera on my Z Fold 3 because it gets hot to the point you'll start seeing dropped frames in video, especially here in Southern Florida. My Note 10 Plus is still my camera phone because it doesn't throttle. It still gets hot, but I don't drop frames. I shot some of my B-roll and road trip footage on the V50. When I did my Apogee mic review, it was like 100 degrees when I did that video. I shot that on the Galaxy S10. Snapdragon 855s. Any techie who's ever complained about not having the mostest, powerfulest chipset I need you to, like, in your brain, imagine punching them in the gonads. Not to enact any actual physical violence. Don't do it IRL. But just in your brain. The 855 was an amazing balance of power to performance. And you want to shoot 4K 60 frames per second video, and you want to run that phone hard, and that phone's going to get hot, and you're going to cycle your clips. You probably have 3 to 5 minute limits on 4K 60. An 855 will keep you running longer out in the field than an 888. And it'll probably go toe-to-toe with an 865, depending on the camera sensors that that phone uses. It is just glorious. The 855s were such monsters. And we dropped them as soon as the 865 came out. And techies don't know the F they're talking about if they complain about not, oh, who would buy it? It's got an older processor and it's not goods enough. Screw them. You can pick up an 855 today and still have a premium top tier power user experience. You know, none of this average consumer nonsense. It's glorious. Like picking up my Duo One. Oh, it's got that old 855 in it. Still awesome. Still great. Doesn't tank battery life. Plenty of horsepower, plenty of torque. It's awesome. I hate this style of tech commentary so much. Simon says Hypno One. Would you expect 8 Gen 1 to be roughly one toaster hotter than the 888? I'm hoping that because of the 888, phone manufacturers have learned that there's more responsibility on them to rein in the thermals on these chips. The Vivo is actually a really good example of this. The Vivo outperforms the OnePlus 9 every single time. If you're talking about running, I'm getting a phone call from my old Google voice number. That's hilarious. And my watch is going to keep vibrating until I just shut it down. Where was I? Yes, I like the OnePlus 9, but if you're talking about long video clips, the Vivo performs better. The OnePlus 9 tanks, just crushes the Vivo in a lot of my heavy lifting performance testing. Rendering video, OnePlus 9 is faster. Cutting audio, OnePlus 9 is faster. File compression, OnePlus 9 is faster. I can't remember off the top of my head if the Vivo wins any foot races against the OnePlus 9, but if you're out in the field and you just need to rely on the camera, the Vivo gives you a lot wider windows to shoot with before you get any kind of thermal warning or before the camera shuts off on you. So I think 8 Gen 1 phones are generally going to perform better at launch just because we went through all the teething pains of the 888. When you get into the end of the year, if you slow down the 888, your phone runs better. Every single person who is going to use their phone on a daily basis is going to prefer better battery life and more consistent performance. And that's what that makes a huge difference. So, I fear that the 8 Gen 1 is actually going to be a hotter, more power-draining chip, but that the manufacturers are all going to work harder to narrow down some of those pain points. And this is actually a perfect segue to kind of get us into the last story of the week, and we can kind of spend the last 20 minutes here. Sorry, I just caught Barry Johnson's. But one, the 8 Gen 1 is about to release. Shouldn't I just smash all of my phones to pieces? Yeah, if now that you can see the 8 Gen 1 on the horizon, literally nothing is worth its anymore. And the phone that you currently own is now garbage, right? We can all agree on that. this is a part of what I'm talking about in terms of frustration. OnePlus 9. Here is my beloved OnePlus 9 Pro. I have really enjoyed using the OnePlus 9 this year. Anyone who is anxious or cranky about the OnePlus 9 no longer being the flagship killer brand has been off the pulse of OnePlus for at least 4 years now. I do not believe OnePlus has tried to embody that kind of enthusiast market since the OnePlus 5. I think like the OnePlus 5 was our transition point where OnePlus was really aiming to start a more mainstream phone conversation. The OnePlus 6s did that really well. There was kind of a balance. There were still some compromises on the phones, but they still offered up a tier of performance at a reasonable price, blah, 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 blah. We got into the OnePlus 7s. I don't know. I still don't understand why someone will look at a OnePlus Pro, see that the price tag is pretty close, but still undercutting Galaxies and iPhones, but then go, oh, but they're too expensive now. They're mainstream. They've betrayed us. Like, the phones are just legit competitors. So a OnePlus 7 or a OnePlus 8 or a OnePlus 9 is still a good price performance competitor. It's just that Samsung now also sells a plasticky S21, and Apple also sells a more expensive iPhone 13. It's a two-tier model. So that's just a mainstream smartphone approach. But a OnePlus 9 or a OnePlus 9 Pro still slots in perfectly. A price-to-performance comparison window against mainstream options. The phones have never been better. The OnePlus 9 Pro is the best phone that OnePlus has ever made. They're evolving and they're offering unique features. It's just a mainstream option now. But we've got all of these nerds in an echo chamber ratcheted up about, well, the software is going to change. It really hasn't. I mean, like, yes, I know there are all these lists of, well, this icon isn't customizable anymore. And this one feature that I used to use for having three WhatsApp accounts, that doesn't work anymore. And you're like, yes, I totally get it. Android 12, it was already going to be a big change. And now we're merging Oppo and OnePlus software development. But that's two big changes. It's not just Oxygen OS is its own thing, and we were getting Android 12. It's merging Color OS and Oxygen OS and migrating to Android 12. So maybe I'm being a little too kind. And obviously, there's the smoke and fire aspect of OnePlus has pulled the Android 12 update. I kind of feel if you're on a OnePlus 9 and you really cared about the performance of your device, not the aesthetics of how your launcher looks, but like how the phone actually functions, if you didn't jump on the Android 12 update when it was out, I feel you're kind of missing out on some significant upgrades for this phone. I mean, like, the camera performance is astoundingly fast now. It's neck and neck with Vivo. You pop the shutter button and it snaps an image. And if you have Zeiss color on your X70, it's going to take longer than processing an HDR photo from a OnePlus. It pantses pixels. It demolishes Galaxies. No shutter lag. No post-processing frame selection, gimmicky, sharpest frame nonsense. The OnePlus 9 is now one of the most aggressively fast HDR shooters on the market today. The Pro mode is still really solid. I wish they had the customized filters for it still. You can't set a custom mode on the Pro mode anymore. The video features are still second to none for auto shooters. 4K at 120 frames per second, it's either OnePlus or a Sony Xperia Pro I. Like, those are your choices. And then also the ultra-wide integration. You have an ultra-wide camera sensor that runs neck and neck with the main camera sensor size on an iPhone 13 Pro. I mean, if you want to get spoiled with absolutely stunning photo and video quality from an ultra-wide, the OnePlus 9 is the only game in town. It is, I mean, it's just stunningly good. And so the other thing we were talking about, reining in the issues with the Snapdragon 888, we now have a dedicated performance mode in the battery settings. So I saw people like complaining about their Geekbench scores dropping, And then you'd ask, well, did you turn on the high performance mode? You're like, well, what's that? Oh, you shouldn't have to do that. You're like, you're so dumb. You're so dumb. You're incredibly bad at tech. You want to complain. You don't know what it is that you're complaining about. Because either you were complaining about OnePlus throttling apps in the background, or now you're complaining about OnePlus giving you a battery mode exactly like Samsung does to throttle the performance of your phone to help the battery life and help it run cooler. So what is it? So basically, we've gotten to a point where OnePlus literally cannot win. The commentary is absolutely lopsided, is completely unrealistic, and there is no comparison. You cannot compare this to another phone because this is a OnePlus problem. Even if another manufacturer is facing something completely identical, oh, but this is different because OnePlus betrayed us. It's basically the hyper, hyper emotional tech nerd response that you're going to get. It's not really a practical assessment of what's going on. When people are complaining about the multitasking functionality on a OnePlus, so here, let me get back into my phone. And do I have apps? Okay. So I'm just going to, here I am in Instagram. Oh, I rebooted the phone. It's like, why isn't Instagram just loading? Sorry, I cleared it out. So you go into your multitasking and then you say clear all, and then it just brings Instagram back. Why didn't it also get rid of Instagram? I said clear all. And people are listing that as a bug. I don't like it, but it's not a bug. If you've ever handled a Xiaomi phone, hold on, let me see if I've got apps going. So here, I'm in Chrome. There we go. I'm in Chrome. This is on a Xiaomi. This is on a Poco. And I swipe up, and then I hit the little X to clear all apps. And it brought me back to Chrome. Why didn't it delete Chrome from my... I don't know why Chinese phone ROMs do that. But that's not a bug. And that's one of like the prime... Oh, the multitasking and the RAM clearing. It's all broken. There's no like perspective at all in any of this. It's just, I need to be outraged and I need to feel betrayed. And somehow I'm now a victim of OnePlus making the rest of the software on this phone a lot better in a lot of ways.
Hey, podcast listeners, I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
Dave Burns has got a comment for us. So me and Dave have been talking quite a bit. He had more gremlins on Android 11 that I just did not know about. But this whole notion that, like, you might need to hard reset your phone has always been true. Last year was a miserably bad year for me moving from Android 10 to Android 11. My V60 was unusable after the update. Hard reset, cleaned it out. My Xperia 1 Mark II. Not in great shape, and a hard reset cleared it out. I mean, we go through these cycles. Like, I got real lucky. Apparently, Android 12 liked my OnePlus 9. But it shouldn't be this like completely unrealistic, no one should ever have to do this. But I guess if you hard reset your OnePlus 9, it'll get better. That happens on Samsungs. That happens on iPhones. There were iPhone updates where the prevailing strategy for surviving the update, the recommended advice was, maybe you just gotta back it up and nuke it and then start fresh. Every single computer since the dawn of the telecommunications era has had a situation where if turning it off and on didn't fix it, wiping it out and starting fresh might be the way to... Oh, you shouldn't have to do that, though. Yeah, in an ideal unicorn society of magic pixie fairy dust, you're right. We should not have to do that. But the realities of really owning a pocket computer in this day and age do not resemble your magical nerd boy fantasy of everything just working. Sorry, I was going to read Dave's comment. If we're talking about OP now, I have been having this conversation since I got the OnePlus 9 that I should do a clean restart because moving from 10 to 11, it was already a rough experience and now issues have compounded. That said, this update fixed a ton of ease of use issues I've been having all year. I was going to do a clean install already, but now I'm just committed to using a day of my vacation for it. I feel like that's probably the healthiest response. In much the same situation that I was in last year, going from Android 10 to 11, I kind of feel like it's the safer maintenance idea. That if you're going to go from Android 11 to Android 12, use this as your opportunity to clean house. Also, get rid of apps that you're not using anymore. Clean out, you know, cache, clean out storage. If you got a bunch of stupid photos that are just backed up for no good reason, wipe them out. Like, make it kind of the end of the year, just clean house. I think a lot of people will feel better about their products, especially getting into the second year of ownership or into the third year of ownership. It's going to feel like you have a brand new phone again because you kind of do. I'm really not happy. Like, I kind of called when LG left the scene, another company would need to sort of step up as the whipping boy. And my vote was OnePlus because OnePlus still occupies this chunk of SEO. They're a popular enough brand to talk about that you get a lot of enthusiasts engaged. Even though their sales numbers don't hit some of these other brands, these sort of alternative brands, their actual sales numbers don't reach that tier, their search viability makes them a much better target. So you use OnePlus as the example of the can't do anything right company, and you'll piss off a few OnePlus owners and a few OnePlus diehards, but overwhelmingly Samsung, Apple, Xiaomi sales way higher. So it's safe to kind of put OnePlus in that role. And you never really need to look any further than that. You can always kind of crouch this as, well, they just can't do anything right. And here's another misstep from OnePlus. And their phone had a bug. And look at what they did to try and rein in the overheating issues of this SoC. And look, their multitasking window works differently now. Who would ever want that? And you can always kind of manipulate that tone. The exact same issues, the exact same problems, and often the exact same solutions on a Samsung can be presented in a reasonable, we're going to be fair. We can highlight, we would prefer Samsung not do these things, but I think Samsung came up with the most reasonable balance of compromises. And then you just take the label, the Samsung label off and put the OnePlus label on, the exact same situation. Well, it's just more proof. That's the evidence you need. OnePlus can't do anything right. Am I right, guys? High five, Eiffel Tower. That to me is kind of the contributing tone to this evidence that I've been presenting over the last couple of years of watching how our tech commentary is guided by these influencer trends to the financial benefit of like content creators on YouTube. and it really sucks. I mean, yeah, I think it's a massive bummer that OnePlus pulled their Android 12 update, and it makes my video look stupid. Because I'm talking about all the things that I like about this update and how so many of these things have improved. And yeah, now it kind of makes me look like I'm just some OnePlus shill. But I'm using the phone right now. I have no issues with ColorOS. My personality was not defined by the launcher skin on my phone. And I can't talk to people who are that invested. Like, I got a couple comments from two people on the video just like, this is just such Chinese garbage now. And you're like, who do you think made the phone before? But Oxygen OS was different because reasons. It absolutely was not. That is still a Chinese-built ROM. I need you to be 7% less histrionically racist on my comments, please. And they're so keyed up about it. My phone performance is terrible now. Well, what's the problem? What's affecting your phone? The Geekbench score is like 20% lower. Yeah, but like, didn't everything else get better? Like, you know, we're not having that strange throttling experience on social media apps anymore. No, it's garbage now. Geekbench, lower. Like, what are you talking about? Then turn on the high performance mode. I shouldn't have to turn on the high performance mode. Then you'd just go back to the way that it was on Android 11 that you were complaining about, where you had no control over the performance options for different apps and services. Yeah, but it's different. Just take them and just shake them just until they stop. It's just so bad. It's really a bummer. If you shot on a OnePlus, the cameras are so good, and you had all these techies just patting themselves on the back to complain about how OnePlus cameras always suck. Like, oh man, to have this hardware now process photos with this speed, it's kind of rad. It really is. So now I need to run it a little bit harder because I can't really validate the performance. So the performance things have two components. One, I can say the phone seems to run more consistently. That to me is already a perk. I do not care if I have the spikiest performance. I want kind of the best go long-term performance, but I've got to go and like maybe run a video rendering test, see if these things have changed. But the thing I can't verify yet is if the performance throttling options in the battery settings really do improve battery life to the tune that OnePlus is claiming. Because when you turn off the high performance mode, OnePlus is saying like you might expect as much as a 20% bump in battery life. But that means I need to run the phone for a couple days to get a feel for, and especially to kind of like let Android 12 learn about my daily usage. And then I need to find a way to run the phone consistently for 2 days, one day with battery saving, with the power mode low, and one day with the power mode high. And I don't know that I can do that. I don't know that I can verify OnePlus's claims that like, you might get 4 hours of additional runtime on a phone that's already at high performance mode is already claiming to be able to be run for like 22 hours, and not screen on time, but just 22 hours straight before you hit a charger. So that's kind of the bummer is I'm not sure how to comment on that kind of stuff anymore in general. And it's a little bit more difficult to verify when there are so many data points to consider on a OnePlus, on the OnePlus specifically. Sorry, I caught, and Dave has been leaving some other comments in here and stuff too. And it's not to say that it's like been completely bug-free, but the glitches and the issues that I've been experiencing on the OnePlus 9 don't seem to me to be any worse. Like nothing systemically worse than what we're going to see on any other Android 12 update. And if the goal is merging Oxygen OS and Color OS as a code base, I don't see how that's a bad thing. I really don't. To me, that would mean that there are lower development costs and there should be a faster cycle of updates and hopefully longer term windows of support if the company isn't having to reinvent the wheel. If the company isn't having to have two wholly separate divisions of software developers to maintain different phones, this should be a benefit in the long run. And that's what I want to see, is I want to see if this really does improve the situation for folks looking at longer term software support. But again, even just getting into the aesthetics of it, if you've ever used FunTouch, if you've ever used MIUI, if you've ever used OneUI, even the Pixel Launcher, none of this is stock Android. None of it's stock. All of it is heavily skinned and customized and animated and all these goofy, silly, fun things that are supposed to make you feel bubbly about your phone. I don't see how this is fundamentally any different. And I'm definitely not a OnePlus enthusiast from the flagship killer days. The flagship killer days of OnePlus were my least favorite days of OnePlus. I really like OnePlus as a more mature company now. I don't know how to talk to people that were flagship killer enthusiasts. I'm nervous. Like, I want to make a video about this Poco. The Poco community is far more reasonable than the flagship killer OnePlus fans. I'm still anxious about talking about this phone. Because bringing up, like, there are absolutely reasons why I think people should spend more than a Poco to get a phone that fits their needs. Having criticisms of a Poco can still get you into that ire of lowest price at all costs kinds of users. And that's not my crowd. That is not my scene. See, yeah, exactly. Dave, this is kind of how I felt. If Color OS is the core and Oxygen is the Western implementation, we'll be fine. Again, just like some like light skinning to make OnePlus stand out from an Oppo is fine. But we also get some of that additional Oppo development. Like, it kind of took me by surprise, but here, I gotta kind of boost this. I was lazy and I left a circular polarizer on my phone, so it's doing on my camera, so it's doing weird things with my phone screens, like how that's looking. If you're watching the video of this. But like, there's a one-handed mode on a lot of Android phones. Well, Oppo also includes this, this kind of like slide action where you kind of slide up on the edge and then you can very quickly, you know, scooch over to another app. This is separate from one-handed mode. It's such a unique, cute little like brief interaction. I mean, like, I like it a lot, and it's how I kind of naturally am already interacting with my OnePlus. Like, I can swipe up and I can get to all of the other apps, and my little hobbit stumpy thumbs can reach all of this stuff so much more organically. That's not something we ever had in Oxygen. And people are like, oh yeah, but ColorOS has already had that. Well, then it's a good thing that OnePlus users get to benefit from some of the customizations of ColorOS. That's a feature I like. That's a usability feature I am already jumping on top of for not having used a lot of Oppo devices. That's the thing that kills me. It's like all or nothing. This one thing on a OnePlus phone is not working the way it was before. Throw out all of your OnePlus phones. Never buy from that company ever again. Everything's garbage now. They've completely betrayed their user base. They have no identity of their own. Emotions, emotions, emotions. But then you point out, like, radically better camera performance. Well, yeah, but they should have had that from before. I hate that so much. And Gary, again, like, man, this stuff is getting ugly. I've seen a lot of anti-Chinese posts in Amazon live streams and on YouTube. The political implications of how that part of the commentary is going down is also just... I'm not sure how to bridge a conversation like that. It's it it gets really ugly. You start looking at some of these Chinese manufacturers and you kind of understand the different market forces at play and how we're probably due some market corrections. And you point out competition and techies don't go for it because they want to be on the winning team. Well, you know, like Samsung can't carry the entire smartphone market on their own. And we had LG representing the third place smartphone manufacturer here in the United States, and then they left. And Samsung fans are acting like it's so exciting that Samsung has largely eaten up the remnants of LG's market, right? That should not be a good thing to them. In South Korea, Samsung is now 85% of the local smartphone market. But that means they have no local pressure to improve their products. That is a scary consumer marketplace to be in. 85% of the sales these last two fiscal quarters have been Samsung. That's not healthy. That's not good for a marketplace. And Samsung is going to increasingly find themselves in trouble in other regions, like how Samsung has almost vanished from China. So who do we have? Who's left? Sony, Samsung, and China. If we proclaim enthusiasm for technology, that should be a very concerning trend in how these market forces play out, in what we desire as competition, and how these products are sort of slated to improve. Like, Apple's not going to really get that done. Apple's going to make changes to benefit their own profitability, and then every other manufacturer is going to copy Apple, including Samsung leading the charge. So we're in not good shape as a community. The phone market is the least healthy it's ever been. It's the least competitive it's ever been. And at the same time, we're seeing this renaissance in laptops, in Chromebooks, Macs. Never been more competitive. Price, performance, mobility, power, unique features, folding, flipping, screens, powerful GPUs. And there's an excitement around the next phase of Windows on ARM and new SoCs. And Intel is finally getting competitive. And AMD's chiplets are awesome. And GPUs. And our phones are withering. Our phones are dying. They're becoming more expensive and they're becoming less feature-packed. I have more horsepower in a phone, there's less I can do with it. What's the point? What's the point of having more power in a phone if there's literally, physically fewer things I can do with that phone? So to just kind of wrap this up in this toxic jingoism, this like, again, it almost starts to sound a little like nationalism. Oh, OnePlus and Oxygen OS were great before China got involved. It's a OnePlus. It's still a BBK brand. Oxygen has never been an American operating system. Are you mad? But now it's cool to complain about, even though they don't understand what it is that they're complaining about. Oh, this is a good one. Yeah, I never did things like this, so I haven't been bothered by it. But I understand why some people are. Dave writes, I understand the frustration some people are having when some core customization features like per app reskinning are gone. But again, I can still use whatever icon pack and like candy icons. And I don't know if custom icon packs is a part of ColorOS. And I don't know. The OnePlus was great because they got me into like changing icon shapes. So customization options like that are still there. That's as deep as I went. So I was good, but I also feel like at some point, if I need to, I could slap on Nova Launcher. But so far, the little additions to ColorOS have been things that I've liked. So I haven't been much bothered by some of the things that have been cut that were deeper in the weeds OnePlus features that I did not define my personality by. So, yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh. This is from, I don't know if you're Spud Annual. I think you're making a potato pun, Spud. Spoo Daniel, main character syndrome, absolutely in full effect. And again, like, I feel it's still the toxic remnants of how OnePlus started their brand that techies never let go of. Techies never grew up. And to me, that's the saddest part. They look at videos like TechAlter, how enthusiast brands will betray you. And all they did was look at the title and feel the emotion, betrayal. They didn't actually watch the video. They didn't actually listen to the commentary. They just wanted to feel victimized. And so they did. And somehow, especially in these Western tech enthusiasm communities, that's the only thing they've ever been able to latch onto. I want to feel like this company wronged me and I have something to complain about. They didn't really look at the company for what it was. Again, from the OnePlus 6 on, this is not the flagship killer brand that they're all pretending that they were a part of that club. So anyway, I'm already running long and I don't have a lot of voice left. I did want to save some of this conversation for kind of wrapping up the year and talking about like best of the year. I don't think I'm going to make another standalone video. I've kind of been doing this trend for a while anyway, but while I don't believe there is just like three tiers of phones, you know, like I don't believe there's entry level, mid-range and premium. I believe that more phones should be judged on more individual criteria. I also don't believe that there's been any phone of the year for a while now. For me, like in my brain, I kind of feel like the last time we saw a dominant, this phone redirected how we made phones and changed the discussion around phones was the Note 4. To me, that was the bleeding edge technological platform that there's like a before Note 4 kind of phone and an after Note 4 kind of phone. I don't think we've had that since the Note 4. So what I'd like to do, next week, we got an official notice from our power company that we're probably going to be in a blackout next week during the time of the show. So I won't be able to broadcast like this next week. So I'd like to send everyone home with some homework of what are some of the criteria for individual awards that you would give. And if we want to get super granular, let's get super granular, not bestest camera, because that's dumb. And anyone who claims that they can come up with a single criteria evaluation of a camera, again, don't actually act on it, but just imagine like how satisfying that it would be if that person were just like flicked in the ear by like a professional ear flicker, just to watch them like flinch. But don't act on that. But just imagine. The imagining is the fun part. But getting down into like best auto mode, best video stabilization, best audio capture while shooting video, best night mode. You know, if we want to condense this down, what I'm hoping to do is next week, running the show off of one of my phones, because I'm not going to have power. Maybe I can take it out to a park and just annoy a bunch of people playing out at the playground. And we can do our bestests of the year, but in a healthier, more celebratory fashion where literally every company deserves some kind of recognition for a feature or a product or a service, and we can kind of spread the love a little bit more. No phone of the year, but individual best features of the year. Hit me up on social media. Use the contact page on somegadgetguy.com. If you're a member of the Patreon, send me a message on the Patreon or in the Discord. And let's see if we can really combine all of these ideas. And I'll come up with like a master list. And we'll do our own little mini nature award show. As I'll be broadcasting out in the field, because I won't be able to broadcast in-house. And that's kind of the week leading up to Christmas anyway. I feel like that would be the best way for us all to spend a little holiday time together. A shorter show, but only focused on our favorite individual features on products of the year. I'll break them all down. Best telephoto, best main camera, best ultra wide. If you want to go super lean, best screen, best stylus support, best battery charging safety features. You know, like we can, every little bit of this, we can come up with a huge bracket and I'll share what I think and we can use that to kind of talk about, just plan on a shorter show next week. I know I would have more fun with that. So hit me up, drop me those comments, share some of these ideas, and let's really put together a fun community collaboration on our awards for 2021. Oh, Fat Produce. I just ran into a guy at Jiffy Lube rocking an LG V60 in the wild. You know, the V60 did okay. I know, like, LG made all their money on, like, K-series phones and the Stylo. But the V60, I mean, sold better than the V50 because of all the stupid carrier issues. Anyway, I digress. So, folks, we're going to go ahead and close this show down. If you're around at around 5:30 Pacific time, I'm going to be joining a fun pop culture podcast, The Kids on the Stairs. Brenton on tour. I really enjoyed. It was before we moved here. I joined him on his Coffee Chat podcast. Again, if you wanted to hear my horrifically uninformed opinions on coffee roasting, that was a really fun show to join. But he also co-hosts like a pop culture podcast. It's a kind of a riff on a joke from Mallrats. This week we're going to be they're going to be doing some of their like techie gadget toys, you know, sort of a nostalgic look at fun toys and stuff. So I'm going to join them tonight at 5:30 and we can chat about comics and movies and music. I have a podcast to share with them that I think they'll really like. And then some of like my old classic toys. We're going to maybe pull some stuff off the bookshelf behind me. So if you didn't get enough of me talking, there's another hour of conversation happening later this evening. Folks, thank you so much for jumping in, for joining, for participating. This hype train was amazing. Two Turbo, Dave Burns, and Gary the Fireman, thank you so much for supporting this stream, supporting this channel, the production on this channel. It means the world to me to find my little cranky collection of tech-loving nerds that we can all sit at this one little lunch table to know that we have each other's backs on this kind of stuff. So I hope everyone that you have an amazing week with your technology. I hope you do awesome with your tech. I hope you you are awesome with your tech. And I'll catch everyone back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SDGQA podcast channel. Be safe. Take care, and more than anything else, especially at this time of year, look out for yourself, give yourself the tune-ups you need, and that's the only way you're going to be able to help the other people around you who probably also need a little attention too. But don't get overwhelmed, and know that there are friends and resources and places to go. If you need a little help, you need to chat, you just need to blow off some steam. A lot of folks are out there, and this is the right community to kind of show that off. And TK dropping a bunch of last minute tier ones right at the end. Welcome Soap, Irvink, Capta, Caveman, Savaticus, and Feet Fancy 3. Thank you so much, TK. We'll be streaming we might not be streaming on Thursday. I got to talk to TK off of this stream. Anyway, thanks so much. Take care. Be well. I'll catch you back here next week for another episode. I love you all.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take better photos. Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.